Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
The all-new Hyundai i20, Ireland's fastest-growing small family car this year. The motor press say, the old guard need to be wary of being overtaken. See what they mean by taking a test drive in the striking all-new Hyundai i20. The daring super mini that's shaking up the competition. Visit your local Hyundai dealer today. Fastest-growing small family car this year based on the most recently published monthly figures.
Hello and welcome to Talking Point, the podcast by Planet F1. I'm Finny Kuroda, and joining me today to discuss the 2021 Monaco Grand Prix is Henry Valentine. Henry, how's it going?
It's going all right, thank you. Yeah, it was one of those races where there's still plenty to talk about, even though absolutely nothing happened.
Yeah,
weird one.
Yeah, it's a strange one. It turns out on-track action, we had about one occasion of it in the TV director cutaway anyway.
But he didn't want to see Lance Stroll jumping over the swimming pool, you know.
madness. But yeah, like you said, we do still have lots to talk about because it had, lots happened off track and it had a big effect on the championship. So in the longer term. So, the only place to start really is at the front, of course, with Max Verstappen winning his first ever Monaco Grand Prix in pretty comfortable fashion. Yeah, obviously a lot of factors went his way. His life was made easier by two retirements, but even so, it was pretty darn good drive from him, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. He it was absolutely manna from heaven from him that the Charles Leclerc couldn't even start the race, which I know we'll get onto very shortly. But his start was very, very deliberate, wasn't it? He angled his car like directly towards Valtteri Bottas, made sure he got just enough of a good getaway to almost shove him into the wall, and then from then on he got away a bit, controlled it well, and it was pretty much as simple a race around Monaco as it could have been for him, which paid even more dividends when Lewis Hamilton had such a tough weekend.
No, it was probably one of his best wins, I'd say, given the track it was at too. And I mean, it felt like such an important win, I think, obviously, because with Mercedes having a bit of a horror show, he obviously took the lead of the championship for the first time ever, which feels strange to say because he's obviously been at the front of things for so long. But I don't know. Looking at it, it was the first time this season that I kind of came out of it thinking, oh, he could actually win the title this year.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I read this morning that it's not just the first time he's led the Formula One World Championship. Apparently, it's the first time he's ever led a car World Championship as well. I mean, so he's won pretty much everything in karting. But for him to finally take that step up and what he did on Sunday that Sebastian Vettel couldn't do, maybe say 2017 or 18, is when Lewis Hamilton had a bad weekend on a rare one, he took full advantage of it. And now leading the World Championship for the first time, it'll be interesting to see how he reacts to that. And how how, even more importantly, Lewis Hamilton could try and bounce back in Baku, because I think that would be really interesting to see.
The big step Verstappen made was, if you look at his like previous races he's won, he hasn't really been the favorite, and I think he prefers that. You know, when he's had the pressure, when he's been expected to do well, he's struggled quite a lot. You know, I remember Mexico a few years ago when Red Bull looked strongest and everyone thought he was going to get pole, and then, you know, Ricciardo took it from him last minute. And there's been quite a few occasions like that where he's been the favorite and he hasn't really handled it too well. But I mean, obviously he was the big favorite in Monaco after Leclerc pulled out, and yeah, he never really looked like giving it up.
No, exactly. He didn't look like he was in trouble at any point. It was one of those where, I mean, do we dare call it a coming of age drive, even though he's been in Formula One for about 6 years now? It was definitely one of them where you sensed a bit of a change within him at the weekend. And soon as, I mean, on Saturday in qualifying, he had that really, really sweary team radio rant after Leclerc crashed. And it's almost like he managed to reset himself. And once he pulled out, it was pretty plain sailing for him, really.
Yeah, it's a nice, relaxed Sunday drive, really. It was, it's obviously, he did effectively start on pole, even though he was on the P2 grid slot. And, if you start on pole, you should be expected to win. But even so, I think it was just the manner of it. You know, he never sounded flustered. There was never a moment where you thought, oh, you know, could Sainz get him in the pits or anything? Or even before Bottas retired, Verstappen still kept that gap pretty steady. Yeah, I don't know. So looking ahead then, driving like that, you reckon he can keep this going against Hamilton?
Well, maybe, yeah. It was one of those afternoons on Sunday that made you sort of realise just how much he's improved in race management as well, because any time Bottas got reasonably close to him, because there were occasions where he sort of pulled out a 4 or 5 second gap and then he got it back to within about a second and a half, and he just managed to pull out those lap times when he needed to. I think there was one point when Sainz was about 8 or 9 seconds behind, and then he got down to less than 2 seconds and he just managed to eke it out again. So I think that's something that bodes well for him, but at the same time, it's another angle to his driving that Lewis needs to watch out for in the upcoming races, because he's now the hunter again, Lewis, and it'll be good to see how he reacts to that, because he's not been in that position for a long, long time.
No, and we've never had this situation where it's Hamilton chasing down Verstappen. I think when he went up against Vettel, Hamilton kind of thrived on that, chasing Vettel down. Because, I mean, I think both years, Vettel had a fairly hefty lead at one point after a few races. So, I think it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, Verstappen's day was made a lot better by the fact that Hamilton didn't have a particularly good day himself. I don't know, he just never really looked on it this weekend, did he?
No, it's the first time you could say from Lewis for a very, very long time that he just didn't look on it from the start. I mean, Bottas comfortably out-qualified him. He didn't have a good time throughout all of free practice as well, and it just looked like one of those weekends where it looked like one of those weekends in probably the sort of 2000 to 2009 to maybe 11 era, where every so often he would just have a weekend where nothing would really happen for him. And he just wasn't on it at all. And obviously, speaking of sweary team radio, he had a few angry moments, obviously, because not only was his attempt at an undercut on Pierre Gasly a bad one, he then lost out to Sebastian Vettel and Sergio Perez as well while being stuck behind him. So there were a few things that compounded against him, and just didn't, like, nothing really felt right from him from Thursday morning, really, in practice.
No, it reminded me a lot of in 2016 when he was obviously fighting Rosberg for the title, and he just had those weekends. I think Singapore was the main one that I looked at and remember, you know, thinking, you know, it's not the Hamilton we know, you know, it's kind of a shadow of his usual self and his driving isn't great. And then he kind of takes it out on the team radio, which I don't think's too constructive either. Can't blame him for it, obviously. I mean, to be fair, this time around, it was his team's fault that he lost all those places.
Poor Bono, he gets it in the year when things don't go well, does he? But I'd say that's pretty commonplace up and down the grid. But I think we just hear it more because it's from because it's from Lewis, and when things don't go well, they really don't go well for him.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you think it is just one off? Do you think there's any reason to think that this is maybe a bit of a concern for his title aspirations?
Well, Toto Wolff said that Mercedes are only planning on making, in his words, tiny tweaks to the car, like from now to the rest of the season. I mean, I don't know how much I believe that, but you know, I think they're relying on Lewis to sort of drag the car as far as he can. But I think if it carries on in this trend, I think they'll probably take another look at it, because you know, in Lewis's own words on social media, to quote the man himself, this weekend sucked balls.
Yeah,
so you know,
yeah. I think it did show maybe just how, because we kind of figure you don't talk about it as much now because it's kind of a given, but I think it did show how important that Mercedes engine is just in straight line speed, because obviously they weren't very special in terms of pace this weekend. And neither were McLaren really compared to their main competitors, Ferrari. And yeah, I think it did show that Mercedes engine does give them such an advantage in terms of straight line speed. So,
I mean, and that is absolutely everything in Baku, isn't it? So
yeah,
that,
exactly,
you know, that could
yeah.
rectify itself next time out. Yeah. But obviously, well, actually, Baku's a bit of a tale of two tracks, isn't it? Because that second sector is so twisty and technical and tight.
Yeah.
That you know, it'll be really interesting to see how it plays out next time. But yeah, I think that's the next kind of litmus test for them. And like you say, I think around Singapore, for example, where similar characteristics to Monaco, that can make them struggle again later in the year. So that'll be really interesting to see which tracks play into Red Bull and Honda's hands, and which for Mercedes, which, yeah, again, it's another dimension to the season. I'm looking forward to seeing how it all plays out with them.
Yeah, it is great that they have such different cars. It's, again, like Ferrari v Mercedes 2017 and 2018. You're looking at tracks and seeing which ones benefit, but which cars, you know, if they had similar ones, then it'd kind of be, you know, they'd balance out throughout. So yeah, it makes more interesting. And well, so does the fact that Red Bull now lead Mercedes in the Constructors' Championship by a single point, which don't think anybody would have seen coming before the weekend. But well, for this, I think we have to got to give props to Sergio Perez, don't we? Started
well, P9.
P9, yeah. So then P8 once Leclerc pulled out, and got all the way up to P4, just, you know, with the overcut, some seriously good laps once everyone had pitted. I mean, it was, I don't know, what do you reckon? Best drive since he joined Red Bull?
Oh, definitely. You know, I mean, obviously for Checo, it's one of those where he just can't seem to get a full weekend together yet. So he's had good qualifying sessions and he's had good races, but he's not had the two together yet. In Monaco qualifying, obviously you'd say he was out of position. And but this I've used the phrase the tire masseuse before, and I'm pretty sure like he just managed those tires brilliantly. And as soon as he needed to get the hammer down, he just did, and he was comfortably the fastest man on track. Verstappen came out the pits behind him, and there were thoughts, oh, well, he's just going to move over for him, but he actually pulled away from him and just gained that time that he needed to gain. And yeah, leapfrog three cars in the pit window, which is brilliant for not only his confidence but the team's confidence in him, I'd imagine.
Yeah, definitely. It was it's the exact sort of drive that they need from him, really. You know, it right up there, not to the extent where he's causing issues with Verstappen, but still picking up a lot of points himself. I mean, he's not far off Bottas in the standings now, you know. It's it's all gone pretty well. And I think he probably, if it was any other track, he would have got a podium, wouldn't he? Because he was,
yeah,
the pace deficit to Norris at the end was just so big. He was catching so quickly. But again, I think it was about that main strength of his, managing his tires. You know, I mean, I remember in the first stint, he was behind Vettel and he wasn't really closing on him, you know, 3 seconds I'd behind for a lot of it. And I remember looking at it and thinking, oh, it's another poor race for him. But it turned out he was just saving his tires, because as soon as he got that free air, he was so much quicker. And then it happened again in the second stint, you know, once it got to like 15 laps left, he just caught Norris so quickly.
Just to add to that as well, I think I mean, obviously you say 3 second gap, but that in itself is kind of race management, because he was staying out the turbulent air, which meant he was able to preserve those tires even longer. So the Red Bull strategist obviously saw that there must have been like a gap for him to be able to just drive into the distance, and it paid off for them. It really worked. And we, you know, we gave Mercedes that much praise for their strategy in Barcelona. I think we need to probably do the same for Red Bull for this time around for Monaco, because I think that that played a big part in Perez being able to overcut, because I'd imagine they'd have seen how well it worked for Sebastian Vettel, who we'll probably get onto in a minute. Yeah, I think that was a really, really good move from them.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I think he, within one single move, I think that of all of them, that was the one that gained the most places for any driver, really. And yeah, like we said, gave Red Bull the lead in the standings. Although that is only because of the disaster for Valtteri Bottas, who was actually, he, like Perez, he was also looking, well, I mean, all weekend he was looking really good, wasn't he?
Yeah, you have to feel sorry for him, really, because he had, like I said earlier, he had a much better weekend than Hamilton anyway. And it can't be easy to focus when all anyone is saying about you is, are you going to be leaving the team? And then you comfortably out-qualify your seven-time world champion teammate. You're looking like you're definitely staying in touch for the win, at least. And then you get into the pits and then your right front tyre just won't come off, which is a horrible way for his weekend to end as well, because the only thing that matters at the end of the day are points on the board, and he would have got plenty. And
yeah
for that to happen to him, I think it's just, yeah, it's just bad luck above all else. And I do actually feel sorry for him after Monaco. Yeah.
It is funny, we're here talking about, you know, what everyone in the sports they're saying, oh, may as well just get rid of Bottas, bring Russell in. I mean, Bottas isn't all that, but I mean, he's just gone a whole weekend comfortably outperforming Lewis Hamilton, which I don't think you could really say about many drivers on the grid could do that. You know, I think it's the fact that he's alongside Hamilton and up against Verstappen as well, maybe makes him look a bit average. But you kind of look at that and you wonder, if you put him against a standard driver, not like the top tier, he'd probably be right up there, you know. So with him, with Perez looking good, I mean, hopefully Baku, we can get a four-way fight.
Yeah, well, then that'd be really interesting to see how it plays out. I mean, obviously we've still got plenty to talk about from Monaco, but I think Baku, every year for Baku, it's been a great race. So hopefully it'll be the same again.
I think one thing that's going to be different there, though, is from Monaco, is the fact that in Monaco, Ferrari were right up there as well. They were every bit as quick as Red Bull and Mercedes. You could even say quicker. Obviously, that red flag in qualifying prevented others from doing their second runs. But, you know, first things first, discussing the kind of Ferrari-McLaren group. I mean, pole at Leclerc, yeah, it was quite something, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was one of those where everyone's eyebrows are kind of raised in FP2 when Ferrari it was a 1-2 in free practice, and that suddenly made people go, oh, hang on a minute. They looked like they made a good step in Barcelona, but equally in Monaco, that shows where downforce is king and like cornering is so important. That shows that Ferrari have got a good car underneath them. And if they can keep working on that, I mean, obviously they don't want to work on it too much because it will hamper them for next year. But I think, you know, that's a good, really, really good positive sign for them. And obviously, yeah, feel awful for Charles Leclerc not being able to start his home race. He's not finished any race at Monaco in Formula 2 or Formula 1. So you'd really hope for him that curse lifts at some point. But Carlos Sainz definitely made the most of what was available to him on Sunday.
Yeah, I think Sainz is, of all the drivers to join new teams, he's looking the best, I think. He looks so comfortable so quickly, and he's the only one really that's having good Saturdays and good Sundays consistently. I mean, better than I expected him to do, to be honest. You know, I thought I rated him, but I thought that Leclerc was going to be a pretty good way ahead of him, but that hasn't really been the case. And obviously Leclerc did get pole and then wasn't able to compete in the race, but all weekend really Sainz looked pretty much a match for him, which it's a bit of a surprise to me.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think Will Buxton wrote when Sainz got the Ferrari seat that, you know, he could be the sort of perfect foil for Charles Leclerc, and that he could sort of pick up the pieces when things don't go right for him. And that's exactly what happened. And I think, I think Sainz is only 2 points behind Leclerc now in the World Championship. And that, you know, I think you're definitely right. He's performed by far and away the best out of anyone who moved teams over the course of last season. I think he's now justified why Ferrari, well, parted ways with Sebastian Vettel. I don't know if Vettel had too much choice in that, but I think that, yeah, he's showing that decision was the right one.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, oh, you just wish there were more tracks like this now, don't you? Because we had a real genuine three-way fight in terms of teams for the win, for pole position. I mean, it just shows that, yeah, like you said, Ferrari do have a really good car. I think it's just that engine's probably holding them back, even though it is a lot better than it was last year. It's still holding them back. But I mean, yeah, it's definitely encouraging signs going forward, you know, for next year. If they can already build a car like that, then with the chance to change the engine, do more work on the engine again, I mean, they could be right back in the mix. And with a driver lineup that's capable of fighting for titles.
Yeah, exactly. And that's going to be huge for them in the fight with McLaren. But on the McLaren front, it was such a tale of two weekends, wasn't it? I mean, don't get me wrong, the car looked absolutely brilliant, but only one driver showed themselves to look really good at the weekend, didn't they?
Yeah, and if you told me, you know, if I heard that now, having not seen the race, I'd have assumed, oh, right, so Ricciardo had a great race and Norris struggled. Because, I mean, Ricciardo's like... Yeah, as he said himself, he owns those streets. He's he's so good in Monaco previously. He's got two pole positions there.
He had a win. Should have had a second. Yeah.
Should have had two wins, yeah. But he was just, the gap between them was huge. I mean, he was lapped by Lando Norris in the same car. I get that he was stuck in traffic, but I don't know, he just never looked like doing anything, you know, not in the pits, not on track.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, it was just it's starting to become a bit of a concern, his form, I think.
Yeah, he even said after practice that he felt like he was putting good laps in, and then his engineer was saying he was P15, so he didn't really know where the problems lay. And he's, you know, he even said that the setups between him and Lando weren't too different, you know. And It is worrying, because after Barcelona, we thought, you know, the green shoots were there. He was starting to get form very comfortably, outpaced Norris over the course of a whole weekend. But this completely looked like back to square one for him, which will be a concern. I mean, he's gone well around Baku before. I mean, barring the crash with Max Verstappen, Red Bull. But yeah, five races in, you'd have hoped he'd have started to pick up that form. And like you say, I think it's slight signs of worry for him. Don't get me wrong, he's still got another year or two in his contract after this, and those two are going to be McLaren's drivers for 2022 and I think 2023 as well, so he's got time to turn it around. But it's these aren't brilliant signs for him at the moment.
No, like, I don't have any concerns that he's, you know, lost his touch or anything. I still fully believe he's up there with the very best on the grid. I just think this year might be a write-off for him now. You know, it seems like maybe it will just take him a year to get used to the car, which, I mean, isn't a disaster. It's not the most important of years, I guess. It is kind of waiting around for the regulations now. So, yeah, it's not the end of the world, but it is just, it's such a shocking. I mean, don't know what it is. Maybe, you know, obviously he said he's using a similar setup to Norris. Maybe that's where he's going wrong. I mean, yeah, I think they have quite different driving styles. Maybe he needs to be a bit riskier on that front. But then, yeah, I don't know. It's a weird one, because, I mean, the gap between the two of them was just so big. But then, to be fair, we do have to give credit to Norris too, don't we? I mean,
oh, 100%.
He got second podium of the season. He's pretty, I mean, he's consolidated P3 in the standings.
Yeah, I was going to say,
In the fourth best car, probably.
Yeah, above Bottas and Perez as well, which is huge. I mean, that's great news for him. And I'd imagine that's why McLaren tried to sort of tie him down to a longer contract, which they managed to do. We only know it's multi-year. We don't know how many years, but that's great for him. I mean, but yeah, for McLaren to sign him, I think that's a real statement of intent from them, because he has just gone on to another level this year. I mean, lapping your teammate is the ultimate sign of, like, that's the ultimate sign of superiority over a weekend, really, isn't it? And for him to do that and get another podium, like full credit to him. And it for him to to see him and Sykes on the podium together was a lovely moment too.
Yeah, and it's huge for McLaren as well to have one of their own doing so well. I mean, it's the first time since Hamilton, really, that they've had that. Obviously, Magnussen and Van Dorn didn't work out the way they were hoping. Only driver in the top six not to ever drive for Red Bull or be a part of that academy, which is crazy as well.
That is a stat.
It is great for McLaren, and I do think that if they hadn't signed him up, then he'd be probably linked to Mercedes at this point. You know, Toto Wolff came out a few weeks ago and said they were looking at other young drivers. And first thought is Norris in that part. So, they've got one Norris performing that well. If Ricciardo can get back to his best as well, then you've got, a seriously strong lineup. But I don't know, not thinking too far ahead in terms of this season alone. Are you kind of thinking Ferrari have got the upper hand in that battle for P3 now? Or do you think it's going to, a bit like Red Bull and Mercedes, switch depending on the tracks?
Yeah, it's hard to say at the moment. It looked like McLaren were ahead at the start, and it looks like Ferrari clawed it back. But like you say, I think Ferrari have clearly shown that they've got a car that goes well around corners, but it's the straights that let them down. And McLaren with the Mercedes engine in the back should comfortably have them at circuits like Spa and Baku and Silverstone. It'll just be it'll be another thing to look out for. And yeah, that bodes well for the rest of the season for sure. And it's just great seeing the two of them compete against each other again, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It's so great to see them alongside each other again and fighting for the big points as well. You know, they're not fighting for P9, P10. They're up there for P5, P6, and then even podiums when a Red Bull or Mercedes driver, you know, ends up a bit further back or has some issues. So, it's shaping up to be a really good season from a constructor's perspective. You know, it looks like there could even be a fight for P5 now, because obviously Alpine kind of looked to be in a bit of a league of their own in that position, but that wasn't the case in Monaco. Aston Martin had a great weekend, led by Sebastian Vettel, who had his best race in, God, a long time.
A long, long, long time. I mean, he won driver of the day as well. And you know what? It's fair to see why. He managed to overcut Hamilton and Gasly. And, the one moment where we actually had some sort of fight for a position, as we mentioned, and we just got deprived of it from the TV. I watched the highlights of the race again this morning on YouTube, and they cleverly managed to edit in the rest of the fight, for the position. But that's just me being a cynic. But the fair play to Seb, because he needed a weekend like that. And for him he was comfortably ahead of Lance Stroll all weekend, and like you'd hope for his sake that he's now starting to get used to that car and they've shown more of a turn of pace. But you do wonder if it's one of them where Aston Martin are just better in slow speed corners and things. But it's great for both cars to get into the points. I think it's their first double points finish of the season. And hopefully from their point of view, they'll be able to step up and keep that going.
For Vettel, it really felt like the Vettel of old. You know, he was smile on his face, pretty light going, even did his classic old index finger point when he crossed the line, ring-a-ding-ding on the radio. It was, it felt like the Vettel that did win, that was good enough to win four world championships in a row, which... You know, even when he's had good races with Ferrari, that a lot of the time that hasn't felt like the case, because he's been so, not like last year, he had some good races, not too many, but he just never seemed particularly happy.
He got that podium in Turkey, didn't he? But other than that, it wasn't, it was arguably his worst season in Formula One.
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah.
Yeah, but it's good that he was looking good again at the weekend, and another one where you hope for his sake that he's able to carry that on and start pushing on, because it looks like the younger teammates in these teams seem to have the upper hand at the minute. But if Vettel could keep that going, he'll soon turn that tide.
Yeah, Vettel was the only older head really that managed to get the better of a younger teammate. I mean, we had Ocon beat Alonso.
Comfortably, yeah.
Comfortably, yeah. Giovinazzi beat Raikkonen. Norris beat Ricciardo. It's good. It's definitely good. It's good for the sport to have these younger drivers step it up, you know? And I mean, Ocon and Giovinazzi in particular, they look like they've made a lot of progress over the winter. But I don't, Alonso and Raikkonen, two oldest drivers on the grid, you're starting to think maybe their day's done. They should call it, you know, cool things off at the end of the year? Or is it too soon, do you think?
Maybe too soon. There are still a lot of races left to go in this season, but you still have to give full props to Ocon and Giovinazzi as well, because they're both out of contract at the end of the year, so they really need to show their talent. But I mean, like, neither of them have really previously had a car where they can compete at the front, but they both seem to be getting the most out of what's available to them at the minute, so you can't knock them for that either. And it's it's encouraging for them, because it does make you wonder if they both keep up their form, they wonder where that leaves Pierre Gasly, even though he had a brilliant weekend.
Yeah, it's a weird one, Gasly. Again, he was one of the drivers of the day, but you can't see him staying at AlphaTauri long term. But there's just no room elsewhere for him until Alonso leaves, but that's not going to be until the end of next year at the least. So it's good to see Ocon especially doing well, but it's definitely hurt Gasly. Although, to be fair, Ocon keeps driving like this, Toto Wolff could be having some interesting conversations with him soon. Looking at the other younger drivers, obviously the three rookies, Schumacher, Tsunoda, Mazepin, I think worth a mention for them, because Monaco, arguably the biggest challenge on the F1 calendar, maybe Singapore gives it a run for its money, but they all finished all without crashing. So wasn't the great results, especially for Tsunoda, obviously finishing all the way down in P16, 10 places behind his teammate. But getting to the end, something for them, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, both Schumacher and Tsunoda took a fairly hefty whack in practice sessions, and Mick Schumacher was ruled out of qualifying completely because of it. So, track time is so important around Monaco. And I remember Tsunoda said before the weekend that obviously he'd never even driven a lap of Monaco before, so he was trying to learn it on the PlayStation, and then just he said he kept crashing. So, I mean, there's finally the limit on on that, and then in real life. But it's good that they all managed to finish. I mean, Haas were two laps down on their even on Tsunoda, I think. So that just shows like how far behind they are around the corners, which is, you know, it's a big shame, but for two rookies, they're still learning. And Mazepin didn't do a Mazepin. He stayed on the track. He beat Mick Schumacher. That's not happened yet.
No, he beat Schumacher. He didn't crash. He didn't get in people's ways when being shown blue flags. Yeah, I mean, it was a big step forward for him this weekend, I feel like. That's probably, Haas are probably going to be fairly happy with how their weekend went, just because of that, really. It was, it's the sort of weekend he needed and that he needs to keep having.
Yeah, it's hopefully, a few races in, he is able to. Well, he even said himself that he predicts a much more intense battle with Mick Schumacher towards the end of the season. But I think it's a bit too early to say that. He had one good weekend, and if he can keep that up, then good on him. And I'm more worried about Tsunoda, though, because he was way behind Pierre Gasly this weekend. Look, don't get me wrong, it's the hardest track, and it's the track that, if you haven't driven it before, then you don't know what you're doing. But He's after so much promise in Bahrain, he's not really looked anywhere near him.
No, not since the first race. And I mean, I think it's going completely against Helmut Marko's plan, probably. I think Marko was hoping Tsunoda would smash it, kind of embarrass Gasly, who, Marko isn't the biggest fan of, and maybe even take that Red Bull seat soon so that they can have two Red Bull products back in it. But I mean, at this point, definitely not a possibility.
No, that looks very short-sighted. And there's probably Alex Albon still waiting in the wings. I do wonder if he's going to get shuffled back into AlphaTauri next year as well, because Red Bull have been at pains to say he's still a big part of the team. He was, there were photos of him in the team celebrations yesterday, and I think he's still hanging around. So I think we both know that Gasly's probably not going to be there come next season, but I think Tsunoda definitely needs to step it up a bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's hurting the team because they have a pretty, judging by Gasly's results, at least they have a good car. They have maybe, in terms of outright pace, they're somewhere in between McLaren and Ferrari and Alpine Aston Martin, I'd say. But that obviously isn't shown in the constructors because Tsunoda's just not in the mix. So yeah, he does need to pick it up, but there's still a lot of time. We'll end this Monaco discussion with the inevitable question after what was a pretty dull race in terms of on-track action, obviously, to say the least.
Hey, it was great in the pit stops.
Yeah, there is. The strategy stuff was interesting. But yeah, so I'll ask you, should it still be on the calendar?
Oh, 100%. I think it's not been helped by the fact that the cars have got wider in the last few years, wider and longer. I mean, it was hard enough as a place to pass anyway, but you know, things have conspired that it's just even harder now with the way that the cars are set up. And like Formula E a couple of weeks ago showed that it can be a brilliant place for racing. Like those races were so exciting. I mean, don't get me wrong, the cars are much smaller and there was actually room to pass, and it shows that you can still do that. So you can't get rid of the Monaco Grand Prix, surely. You know, it is one of the triple crown. And if that disappears, then it makes you wonder what would replace it to start with. And I actually quite like the fact that just for that one race a year, those drivers have to show how good they are. They have to stay on the line. If they go even a few inches off the racing line, then that is it for them. Right. So that, you know, as a one-off event of drivers having to show their class and skill over that length of time, over that many laps, I think, you know, you can't really get rid of it on those grounds, even though the race itself was pretty dull. My point sort of counteracts itself here, but I quite like the challenge, seeing the challenge of it anyway.
Yeah, and I think as well, I mean, it did give us a mixed up podium. You know, we got a podium without a Mercedes, which is a very rare thing in the hybrid era. We're going with two midfield teams, really. Ferrari, McLaren are midfield teams this year. So it is a good top challenge for drivers. It does give us some mixed up podiums. And the thing is, it has been a very good race in the past. Which I think shows the issue isn't the circuit, it's the cars. Too big for one, but also it's just too hard to kind of follow in dirty air. And also there's so much downforce that it's a lot easier to not make mistakes and therefore be able to defend your position, you know? I think next year, obviously the cars aren't going to be any smaller, but it's going to be a bit less downforce, so it might be a bit more difficult to defend. It should be easier to follow in dirty air, so... Yeah, I don't know. I think it can get better, and even if it doesn't, you can't take it off the calendar. It's Monaco. Yeah,
that's it. The drivers love it too much. The fans love it as well. But as much for the location and the history as anything else, it's I can't see it happening.
Well, that's just about everything from Monaco. Next up, Baku. Looking forward to that. Should be a street circuit with a lot more action.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's about four or five lanes wide, isn't it? It's a much better circuit in terms of being conducive for overtaking. That massive straight that takes you all the way down to turn one. It's plenty of opportunities for overtaking. It's a good layout. I mean, they've got the tightest corner in Formula One, I think, going up past the castle. Yeah. I think that's and it's a good challenge for the drivers. Good overtaking opportunities. I've really enjoyed all the races there so far, and hopefully we get the same again.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah. No, I'm really excited for it. It's it usually delivers Baku since it's joined the calendar. So fingers crossed. Well, that's in 2 weeks' time. So. We should be back here to discuss that then. And well, in the meantime, thanks for coming on, Henry.
Anytime.
And thanks to everyone for listening as well. Before the next race, you can find us on Twitter. Twitter's Planet_F1. Facebook is just Planet F1. And our website's planetf1.com, where you can find all the latest news, features, and anything else. So thanks again. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Bye.
Thank you. It's time to move out of diesel. So make the move to Dennis Mahoney Kilbarrack and Toyota's incredible range of self-charging hybrid electric cars. With finance contributions of up to €3,000, join the thousands of hybrid drivers enjoying lower taxes and cleaner air. You'll never take a wrong turn with Toyota, Ireland's best-selling car brand. Visit Dennis Mahoney Kilbarrack today. Toyota, built for a better world. Terms and conditions apply.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.